Okay, we're going to start here at the bottom of Kuf Mem Chet Amud Bet, about 8 lines from the bottom. Ibailuhu, Gemara has a question. Hikdish kol nechasav ve'amad mahu. So we've discussed in the Mishnah that a Shechiv Meira has the ability to gift to other people, and then implicit in that gift, if he gives away all that he has and all of his possessions, then implicit in that gift, there's an umdana that if he gets better and he does not die from whatever sickness it is that is ailing him at this time, then the properties are returned to him, because that's the underlying assumption in the gift. The gift is premised on the fact that he assumes that he's going to pass away. But if he does not pass away, then the gift is reverted back to him. What happens, on the other hand, if it was hikdish kol nechasav ve'amad? Instead of gifting it to others, he was actually makdish all of his possessions. When he's makdish all of his possessions, mi amrinan the kol gabi hekdesh gemaru makne. Do we say when it comes to hekdesh, a person doesn't just give a gift to hekdesh willy nilly? He assumes that he's going to be makne all his possessions, no matter what the outcome is. Oh, then when the kol gabi nafshe lo gemaru makne. Or do we say no? When it comes to a person's personal interest, he still retains an ownership or a dot that when he gifts it, he says, listen, if I'm not going to die from this, I want my money back. This hekdesh is all really premised on the fact that I'm going to pass away. The next question the Gemara says, hifkir kol nechasav mahu. So now, we left the hekdesh question, I want to hifkir. What happens if a person lets all of his possessions go and says that I no longer have any ownership in them? Miyam rinan cave into afna niyam kiashirim gamar makne. Since over here he's releasing all of his possessions, both to not just gifting them to people who already have possessions or to people wealthy, but he's giving them away almost like a tzedakah. He's saying anybody who comes and gets them, that's good. So therefore he's makne gamar umakne belibo, that he's going to give up all possession. Or do we say again, when it comes to his personal interests, he's going to retain his personal interests in his property because he knows there's a possibility, a remote possibility, that he won't pass away from this sickness or whatever is ailing him, and therefore he retains ownership and he does not give it away completely. The next case, chilek kol nechasav laniyim. What happens if he gives all of his money to tzedakah? My, what do we say there? That a person gives tzedakah, wants to do a mitzvah, and he gives away to tzedakah, then he's gamar belibo to give it no matter what, no matter what the outcome of the situation is. Or do we say, or do we say that when a person again has a personal interest, whenever he has a reason to retain ownership because he really thinks he's going to pass away, and that's why he's giving it away. But if he doesn't pass away, he wants it back. So what do we say in these cases? In all these cases, the Gemara says, teku. We leave it as a teku. The Gemara does not know what, again, because this is an umdana, the underlying assumption in the Mishnah is that we are toying on behalf of the individual, that this is what he meant, or this is the assumption of what he meant, because there's an umdana based on the context and the circumstances, is what he meant. In these instances, the chum is a teku. We don't know what the umdana is in these cases. We don't know if a burner is gummer or makne, that they really give up full ownership, or do you say they retain ownership, like a regular case of gifting of a shechiv meira. Now, the Gemara continues, Amar of Sheshet, person who grants a gift of a shechiv meira, if he uses lashon ito, right, that the individual should take it, viske, or he should take possession of it, viyachzik, or that he should assert ownership over it, viikne, or he should take, acquire it, kulam lashon matanahim, all those will work. I mean, if the matanah shechiv meira is granted with those lashonot, they will all work, because those are lashon of tnu, of giving, as we saw earlier in the Gemara, that the person, the shechiv meira, has to say tnu, to give, in order for it to go through. He can't just simply say, eat the fruits, live in the house. He has to say, give it. So all these lashonot are lashon of being makneh, and they all work from matanah shechiv meira. But nitzatana, we learned in the Braiso, af yachasin v'yarat, so that you can use a lashon of Yerusha. Can also work by manat shechiv meira. So when I said, that's beberoi liyorsho. That only works. Those lashonot only work if the individual he's granting to would otherwise have been yoreshim. And it's based on Rabbi Yochanan bar Brokahi. It's based on Rabbi Yochanan bar Brokahi, who he saw in Yoshnochlim. Rabbi Yochanan bar Brokahi over there is the position that a person can redistribute his Yerusha. Meaning that if he is going to be morish to a number of his children, he can redistribute how much each child will get, and that will still function as Yerusha. I mean, even though he's doing it as a quote-unquote matnat shechiv meira, nevertheless, according to Rabbi Yochanan bar Brokahi, it's not a matana. This works midoraisa to be Yerusha. What you're empowered to do as the morish is determine how much of your Yerusha goes to each individual. So even though it's going to function under Yerusha doraisa, and the Torah really lays out that the children will get equally except for the bechor, nevertheless, you can redistribute that wealth. Aside from Bechor, you can redistribute it to the children, and that will still be classified as Yerusha. So if that's the case, you can use a Lashon Yerusha for these types of gifts, because that's exactly what it is. It's functioning as Yerusha, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Ibailuhu. Gemara wants to know, if you use a lashon of yehaneh mehen bahen, that he should draw some pleasure, gain some pleasure from them, mahi, what's the din? Dinahavi kulhu matono. Do they become our? Does it mean that, meaning that when he says, get some pleasure from them, get pleasure from my possessions, it means take them. That's what it means to get pleasure from them. Or is he saying, no, you get something, take a little thing, get some little benefit, or not taking all of the possessions. And the same thing by the Lashon of Yira'eh Bahen. Make yourself appear on my possessions. Mahu, Yamod Bahen, right? What's the din there? Or, Yamod Bahen, stand on my possessions. Mahu. Isha'en Bahen, you know, rest on them, or, you know, lean on them. Mahu. So all of these Lashonot, are they a Lashon of take ownership? Because they indicate, or they are almost simanim of ownership, or do we say simply no, they're lashonot of small giving, not a giving of the entirety of the matanah. And here again, the Gemara leaves it as a take, we aren't sure as to what he means if he uses these types of lashonot. Now, the Gemara asks, Ibailhu, machar kol nechasav mahu. So now we've introduced before, we talked about him being makdish, mafkir, giving tzedakah, and then we say granting as a matanah, shiv meira. In all those cases, the Gemara wants to, is querying about what's the status of the gift or the grant if the Shechem Yichran gets up. So this is another case. What happens if he sells all of his possessions? He sells all of his possessions, and then all of a sudden he's healthy again. So he sold all his possessions on his deathbed, and now he's healthy again. So what do we say? That's a sale. A sale is a sale. This is not matnas Shechem Yichran. It's not under the rubric of the Takanat Chachamim of Shechem Yichran. Therefore, if he gets healthy, he can't go back. The sales are done. But other times you heard that if he gets healthy, he's allowed to reverse the transaction, which indicates it is like matnat shchemira. So how do you can reconcile? This is how we reconcile between them. That is, if the money is still around. I mean, if he sold all the property and the money is still in his possession, then it's clear that he sold the property in because he thought he was going to die. And he's on his deathbed, so he liquidated all of his assets so that he would leave everything with cash. Now, if all of a sudden he gets healthy again, he's going to assume, he take the cash and he'll buy back the property. The reason he kept the cash around was because he thought, if I do succeed in surviving, then I'll use this cash and I'll get all my karka back. On the other hand, if he goes ahead and uses the money, if he uses the money to pay off loans or to discharge other obligations, in that case we say to him, first of all, he doesn't have the money around anymore. So that means that he didn't have in mind to reverse the transaction. Number two is the fact that he went and paid off the debts and he did other things with the money indicates that he thinks that whatever the sale is final. He thinks the sale is final because he's spending the money, he's using the money. If he had not thought the sale was final, he would have kept the money around to see if the transaction actually does go through. So that's an indication on the fact that he does not intend for the transaction to be upended, even if he gets healthy again. So now, Yibayiluhu. Shchiv Mira Shehudeh Mahu. So a Shchiv Mira that admits to something, what is the din? So the question of the Gemara here is somewhat unclear. There's a Machlokas HaRishonim, exactly what the question is. The Rashbam claims that the question over here is premised on a Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that an individual who goes ahead and says on his deathbed, he's a Shechiv Meira, and he says, listen, I owe money to so-and-so, and I am in debt to so-and-so, and so-and-so, and we don't know about these debts. There's no claim. Nobody ever made a claim about this. He never knew he had debts, and all of a sudden he starts admitting to all these debts. What do we say about that individual? Why? Because there are two possibilities of why he's doing this, according to the Rashbam. One possibility of why he's doing this is because he really owes the money. But there is also another possibility. Another possibility is that he really doesn't want, he wants to prevent an ayin hara. That he wants to make it look like he's poor, or make it look like his children are not inheriting so much money. So he admits to all these debts to try to make it seem like he owes money, and therefore whatever Yerusha they're going to get is going to be much smaller than people think, in order to remove the Ayin Hara. There the Gemara concludes that he's not obligated to pay, or the Yoshim are not obligated to pay, because we assume that he's speaking to prevent the Ayin Hara. So over here, the Gemara wants to ask the same question over here. Gemara wants to know, well, we know what happened in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. What about over here, where he admits to it? Why? Because we're going to see in a second, this is a different case. Over there is a case where he admits to the fact that the other individual owns it, but merely owns it because he's the creditor. Over here, he's only going to admit that the other person owns it because he just says he owns it. It's a picadon. It was given to him already. It belongs to him. So that's the question. The Rashbam says, well, then maybe the case is different over here. Because by Hodeh, over here, we're going to say that Hodeh to a malveh or to a loveh, when you say that I owe money to someone, that made people stop looking at your cash anymore. They think you don't have so much money anymore because you have all these debts outstanding. So that reduces the total net value of his estate. On the other hand, when a person says about another individual, yeah, I gave him it as a gift, it's already his. Over there, he's not saying that to take away the ayin hara, because that really doesn't You're not changing anything about the net value of the estate. You're just saying, oh, I gave out other gifts, and so on and so forth. So that doesn't really move the Ayin Hara. And the Rashbam quotes the Pasuk, is that, Eved Lova Leish Malve. Then when it comes to a Lova, he's always like he's in servitude to the Malve, to the creditor. And therefore, a person puts himself in a position that he is, right, owing people money. A person wouldn't do that, unless he really was trying to get rid of the Ayin Hara. Whereas over here, we're going to say that what? To give a picadon to someone else or to say something else, a person would be willing to say that. And again, he would say that without in any way detracting from the fact that it doesn't help him really in terms of preventing the Ayin Hara. So actually, that's the Gemara's conclusion. We're going to see in a second, according to Rashban, the Gemara's conclusion is different. Over there in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, we don't listen to him or the Yoshim are not chayav to discharge the obligation because there he's doing it to prevent the Ayin Hara. As opposed to over here, where in the end we're going to see that his hoded, that his admission works over here because exactly that. The admission is a real admission, that it belongs to him or that he granted it to him, and it's not being used for an ulterior motive to prevent the Ayin Hara, because this is not a good way to prevent the Ayin Hara. Nobody's going to think that he has less or that he is worth less or his net value is less because he says that he's granted it some picadon to someone else. That's a question according to the Rashbam. According to Tosus, Tosus brings down two opinions about what the question is. The first, he quotes, of course, the Rashbam, and he says he doesn't think that is the question. Then he brings the Ri, that the case over here is a Shchimirat that's Hodeh. The Shchimirat Hodeh, how does it function? When he admits that the property belongs to someone else, how does that work? Does it work because it's a Matnat Shchimirat, that the Hodeh, when he admits to it, that makes it into a Matnat Shchimirat? Or do we say the reason that Hodeh, when he admits to owing something or that someone else owns something, it's not working because of Matnat Shchimirat, it's working with Matnat Bari? Then any person, a regular person, can do such a thing. That a regular person is able to admit, and then by admitting, he changes the status of the object. It's hodat baldin kameidim tami. So therefore, you can say anything you want about an object. And when you say anything about an object, then we can determine about that object, or whatever you say about the object is true. Doesn't matter whether it is or isn't true, but nevertheless, whatever you say is true because you are the owner and you're hodat baldin kameidim tami. So therefore, that's the question of the Gemara here. The question is, how is it functioning? When he's Hodeh Shchimira, is it functioning as Matnat Bari, or is it functioning as a Matnat Shchimira? The nafkamina between them will be, if he gets healthy, if he's able to walk away from the sickness. If it's a Matnat Bari, he can't reverse it, because it has nothing to do with him being on his deathbed. On the other hand, if Hodeh works because it's Matnat Shchimira, then you would not be... He would be able to reverse the transaction when you were healthy, because that was a premise, or that's an underlying assumption in any gift of a matnat shchemira. The Gemara's conclusion will be that, and we'll see in a second, is that it works as a matnat bari. It's not working under a shchemira, it's working as a matnat bari. And that goes well with the Tosfos that we saw. There's a Tosfos that we saw on Erev Shabbos on Kuf Memched Amud Aleph, the top of Kuf Memched Amud Aleph there. The Tosfos says, why didn't the Gemara indicate, well, Hodah works by a Matnat Bari, so then by Shchemira? Because he says by Shchemira it doesn't work. That's exactly it. Hodah is not a functioning Kenyan by Matnat Shchemira, because it's called a Matana. It has to be a gift or a grant. It can't be Hodah. So Hodah is not the way that you can transfer ownership by Matnat Shchemira. It exists by Bari, but does not exist by a matnat shchemira. Tosus then brings a third possibility, that the question over here is, when a person does hodat baldin, or he admits that someone else owns it, does it make a difference whether it's in his possession or not in his possession? Meaning, this would be a question of a bari as well. The Gemara only asks about a shchemira here, but the same question could apply to a bari. When you grant something to someone else and you say, oh, I owe this money to him, or it's really his object, when you do that hodat, if it's in your possession, then you're able to do it. What happens if it's out of your possession? You actually have it, it's in with a third party, and then you admit it belongs to either that third party or to someone else, right? Then does it work? I mean, do you have enough control to activate a kinyan of hoda'ah when it comes to something that is in someone else's possession? So Tosus brings that. He still favors the Ri's position, the first explanation he gave. There are others that explain here that the question, two other ways to possibly explain the question. One possibility to explain the question is hoda'ah. Is hoda'ah create a kinyan? In general, can you create a full-fledged kinyan through hoda'ah? I mean, does it function, whether it's by Shchemira, whether it's by Bari? The Gemara wants to know, does Hodah function like a Kenyan? Can you generate a Kenyan through Hodah? That would be one other possibility. And the last possibility of those that say the question here is the Hodeh, where the person, the Shchemira's Hodeh, is only when he tells the truth, or even when he's telling something that we know is not so truthful. I mean, that does Hodah work only when we know, for instance, that he might owe this money, or we have no certainty that it really belongs to him, and therefore he can do Hodah. So he can, if it doesn't go against any chazak or any other knowledge that we have, then his Hodah, his admission will work. Or can his admission work even when we know that's not the truth? Even when we know that's just not the case, can Hodah work or can it function over here? So that would be the question. So now the Gemara is going to give an example or an answer here. Gemara says, Tashma, I can bring you a proof as to what the answer is. And this will answer the question according to all the different parties. It will answer it based on what they think the question is. Tashma, the Isur Guyura, Havale Tracer Alfe Zuze Be Rabo. Isur Guyura was a ger, Isur the ger, had money, 12,000 zuz that was stored, or he was mafkid with Rava. Rav Mari Bray, Horatash Lobik Dusha, Vladotobik Dusha. His son Rav Mari was born, was conceived before the conversion, and was born after the conversion. Now, the Rishbam claims that this Rav Mari here is Rav Mari Brad Bat Shmuel. His Rav Mari is the grandson of Shmuel, and he refers back to the story in Ketubot that discusses about Shmuel's two daughters were taken into captivity, and it seems that they gave in or acquiesced to their the wishes of their captors, and then they married their captors, and only later on were the captors then Chuzer B'tshuva, and they converted. So that's what the Rishbam claims, and he says that this is the same person. This Isur Gyura was converted, and but he already married or already had relations with Bat Shmuel beforehand, and therefore it was Horatash Lo B'kedusha, and then the Gerut happened. He was born afterwards. Tosfos is unwilling to accept this because he says that he doesn't think that's the case, that these are two different people. There's Isur Gyura, and that when the Gemara for over Shas, when it calls, we've seen before, Rav Mari Bray Brad Bat Shmuel, when he says Rav Mari, the grandson of Shmuel, which calls this through his daughter. So the Rashbam and Rashi and other places claim the reason it says it in that manner is because his father was a ger, wasn't under the most pleasant of circumstances that his father married his mother, and therefore they put his yichus through his mother because she was always a Jew, and since she was always a Jew, therefore they put the yichus through his mother. Tosfos disagrees and says, now there are two Rav Maris, and Rav Mari brother Bat Shmuel has nothing to do with this whole case of Isur Gyura, the conversion, or the that he wasn't born B'kedusha, nothing to do with that, but rather they do this. We see there's other Amoraim. Since he was the grandson of Shmuel, and Shmuel was a great Amora, they wanted to miyaches him to his grandfather. So even though his father, you know, he really had a father, and his father, he was born B'kedusha, that wasn't the issue over here. The issue was that they wanted to miyaches him to his grandfather, who was a great Amora. And so the two cases are separate. They're two different Rav Maris. The Rav Mari in this case is different than the Rav Mari who is brought about Shmuel, and they're different people. So that's what Tosfos says. Nevertheless, his son here, who is Horatam Rav Mari Bray, Horatash Lobik Dusha Vleitob Dusha, was conceived before the conversion, born after the conversion, Havai, Bei Rav Havel. And he was away in yeshiva learning. So he's nowhere near Rava over here. So now what happens? Amar Rava, Heiche Nikninu Rav Mari Lahane Zuze. The money is in Rava's possession, and Isur Gyura is on his deathbed. He's on his deathbed, and now he's thinking, Rav is thinking, listen, Isur Gyura is a ger, and what we know happens to the nechsei ger. When a ger passes away, his nechasim become hefker. So if his nechasim become hefker, I'm the first one in possession of it, I will keep all the money. So the only one, he has a child. He has a child, Rav Mari. But now Rav Mari, we're going to see in a second, is his only child, and Rav Mari is not going to naturally be yoresh him because of the problem of gerut. Just see in 1 second. So therefore he says, look, I don't know how Isur Gyura is going to get this money to Rav Mari. If he's not going to get it to Rav Mari, it's going to belong to me. So he tests all the possibilities. What? How is he going to get it to him? Ibi Yerusha, if you say that Rav Mari is going to inherit his father Isur Gyura, lav bar Yerusha hi. He's not a bar Yerusha because he's a ger, and we know as the Rishbam points out here, the Rachman afkare lezare de uvi kachavim, that there is no halachic familial relationship when it comes to non-Jews when they convert. So over here, when he converts, there's no familial relationship over here. So therefore, since Isur Gyura and Rav Mari are not related minadin, minalocha, therefore he's not a yoresh minadin. So if that's the case, it won't just happen naturally that Rav Mari will get it. Wait, he's going to grant it to him as a gift. It'll be a matnat shchimera, be on his deathbed. Wait a minute, we just saw before, Masechta, that Manat Shchimira works like Yerusha. Now back then we saw it only to the positive side, that Manat Shchimira has a din like Yerusha, and it passes down like Yerusha, it functions like Yerusha. Over here the Gemara is saying it even to the other tzad, which is that it works like Yerusha, that means that you have to be, you have to be a viable Yorish. In order for Matnat Shchimira to work, you have to be a viable Yorish. Now, what does it mean that you have to be a viable Yorish? According to the Rishbam, that means the recipient has to be a Bar Yerusha. So over here, Rav Mari, it doesn't have a din of being a Yorish, because he was conceived shelo b'kedusha and born b'kedusha, therefore he's a ger as well, and because he's a ger, therefore he has no din of being a yoresh. So since the recipient isn't a yoresh, therefore the yerusha doesn't work, meaning that the yerusha doesn't work, and matnat shchemer won't work. Tosus, on the other hand, believes that we're focused on the notain, on the grantor. The grantor has to be a yoresh, if he's a yoresh, then he can be maknet to others. So the Tosus actually says in a case where a ger, for instance, has children, a ger who has children who are going to be yoresh him, and since he's a morish, since he is someone that can be morish to children, therefore he can grant a matnat shchemira. He can grant his property to others and act like a matnat shchemira. Afkamina between the Rashbam and the Tosfot will be exactly that case. Where it would be a case where the grantor is able to be morish. He has children now. He has children once he is converted. He has children. So he is able to be morish. According to Tosfot, that's enough to allow you to grant also a matnat shchemira. According to the Rashbam, you being a morish is enough. The recipients also have to be yorshim. I mean, the recipients have to be people who couldn't be yoresh in order for the matnat shchemira to work. So therefore, if you have a third party, say this ger now has children and he's going to be a morish, and there's a third party, he wants to grant a matnat shchemira to a ger, to another ger. So according to the Rashbam, that doesn't work, because the other ger is also not a yoresh. So the recipient's not a yoresh, he can't grant it. According to Tosfos, he can grant it. Why? Because the morish has children. He would be able to be morish's property to his children that were born after he converted. So too, he can grant the matnat shchemira to other parties, other gerim, because it's dependent on the grantor, not on the recipient. So now, what's the next possibility of granting or moving it from Isur Gira, the father, to the son, Rav Mari? So that's what we said, that matnat shchemira can't work, because Yerusha Shav Yerubanan, Kol Heichad Ita Birusha Ita B'Matana, anybody who is and can function within the context of Yerusha can do a matnat shchemira, Kol Heichad Ita Birusha Ita B'Matana, anybody who doesn't function within the halachic framework of Yerusha can't use matana. And again, that's the difference between the Rashbam and the Tosfot, about whether we're focused on the recipient or on the grantor. Even Meshicha, so what are you going to say? He's going to do a Kinyan Meshicha. Rav Mari's going to do a Kinyan Meshicha. No Gabe. He's out at Beirav. He's at the Beis Medrash. He's not here to make a Kinyan on it. Ibr Chalipin. So what are you going to say? That his father will grant it to him by Kinyan Chalipin. Ein Matbea Nikneh B'Chalipin. We know this from Bava Metzia, that you can't acquire monies through a Kinyan Chalipin. So that's not going to work here either, because this is all money that he's left with me. Yeah, Gav Karko. So what are you going to do? He's going to do a Kinyan Agav. He'll say to him, listen, here, take Karko, and Agav the Karko, you'll take the money. He says, Le Aro. Rav Mari has no property. So Rav Mari has no property, may not be such a big deal. We'll see. Both Tosfot over here questions whether that's a big deal. He could just admit that he has some property and that would be enough. The Rashba and others ask, well, he could have just rented some property. You don't actually own property. You have to have some sort of functioning property that you can do a Kinyan Agav with. You don't need something significant to do a Kinyan Agav. Tosfos in the end says that the Gemara has a better answer, and that's why the Gemara lets this go. Ibn Mamad Shlishtam. So what's the other possibility? Is that it's been Mamad Shlishtam? That we discussed this before, that if you have a mafkid and nifkad, and then the recipient of a gift, if they're all present, then if the mafkid can say to nifkad, give this to the recipient. Now, even though it's not a kinyan d'oraisa, it works midrabbanan, mamad shlishtam. So mamad shlishtam, here we have, the mafkid is isur biura, the nifkad, where it is, it's with Rava, and the recipient is going to be Rav Mari. So we can do mamad shlishtam. So Rava says, I can prevent that. Ishalach li, lo azlilna. If he calls for me, obviously Isur Gura can't come over there, he's sick, and he's on his deathbed. So he says, Rava says, I'm not going to go there. If I don't go there, they can't do mamad shlishtam. Now, there are those that try to prove from here, it's actually a machlokas arishonim, whether mamad shlishtam can be done on baal korcho of the nifkad, can be done against the will of the nifkad. Does the nifkad's will in a mamad shlishtam matter whatsoever? So some want to prove from here that it doesn't matter. that it doesn't matter. Why? Because if it did matter, then Rava wouldn't have to not go there. He could go there, and then he could just say, I'm not willing to participate. Now, the Rashba says he doesn't think it's a good claim because he might be embarrassed. When he's standing in front of Mr. Giora, he may be a little bit embarrassed to say, I'm not going to do it. If he doesn't go there, then he feels a little more comfortable rejecting that which Mr. Giora said. So now the Gemara says, okay, we have no way to move the property over here, that nothing works over here. So Matka Flo Ravika, Breda Ravami, so in the base medrash, when they were going through this, he asked Rava, am I? Velodi Isur Davanzuze the Rav Marininhu. So let Isur Giura just say that this money really belongs to Rav Mari. And then he'll take kinyan on them through doing hoda'a, through being admission. So Adahachi Nafak Odita Mive Isur. Then all of a sudden that got the news of the question, the base medrash reached Isur Giura, and that's exactly what he did. He said that money is that they really belong to my son Rav Mari. So Ikpid Rava got upset about this. Amar Kamagamre Tanata Linche Masrili. You're teaching other people. You're making them into, you're like a lawyer. You're teaching them how to be Mekataina. If you hadn't said anything, then I would have kept all this money. Now that you said something, Isur Giura gave all the money to Rav Mari, and I lost out on this. So the conclusion of the Gemara over here is that Hoda does work. Now, Rav is very upset about the fact that Hoda did work over here, and we'll have to discuss why Rav is upset or why Rav thought he should be entitled to the money at all. That we'll get to next. But then that answers all the questions we presented in the Rishonim, many different answers. According to the Rishbam, that's the conclusion over here, that Hoda works. When it comes to Mafkin and Nifkad, we say Hoda is a functioning Kenyan, and that it is a good Kenyan. We don't say that, oh, maybe he's trying to be Mavriach, the Ayin Hara. That's only by Milvit. But we don't say that by Mafkid. According to the read, the question over here is when it comes to a Shchiv Mira and a Shchiv Mira, when he's granting through Hoda'ah, is it functioning like Matnat Shchiv Mira, or is it functioning like Matnat Bari? We see from here, what do we see from our Gemara? Gemara says that a Ger can't be a Shchiv Mira. He can't give a Matnat Shchiv Mira. So the only way it could have functioned over here is through Matnat Bari. So that means that the Hoda'ah over here is functioning as a Matnat Bari and not as a Matnat Shchiv Mira. According to the other explanation in Tosfos, who says that when you are Modeh to a Pikadon, it's not in your hand, can you still do that? Can you still transfer ownership when it's not in your hands when you do Oda? The answer is yes, because we see over here. That's exactly what Isur Giura did. He transferred the ownership when it wasn't in his possession, it was in Rava's house, and he's still able to transfer the possession. According to those who ask whether Hoda is a full-fledged Kenyan, that's the answer to the Gemara, that it is, that it works, that Hoda works as a full-fledged Kenyan. And to the other, last question is whether it has to be the truth that you're telling, or even Hoda, when we don't know whether when we know for sure that it's not true, can you still use Hoda as a functioning Kenyan? The answer is yes. So even though here we knew the money belonged to Isur Giura, nevertheless he's able to transfer it to Rav Mari, despite the fact that we know it belongs to Isur Giura. So we see that Hoda works even in that case to transfer ownership. Again, that might be subject to a question that's only true by a Shchiv Mira or also true by a Bari. It might be that Shchiv Mira is given extra powers and he can do this transferring even though we know it's not true because he's a Shchiv Mira. Or do we say that it's also true by a Bari, that Hoda works all the time? Just reminds us, there's the Tosos in Ksubos asks a question like this: how is it that when everybody gets married, they have these large ketubot? Now we say that if the person owns money or property when they get married, then there's a Shibud on that property. Even if they sell that property and replace it with other properties, the Shiba could move from whatever was there originally to the new properties. But that all assumes that he owns something when he gives the ketubah. He says, we know today that there are people who are poverty-stricken, bochrim in yeshiva, they get married, and they give these huge ketubot. Where's the Shibud? They have nothing. They have no possessions. The Shibud is never chal. So even if they gain possession, they become wealthy later on, the Shibud can't transfer because there was never Shibud up front. So there, the Rabbeinu Tam suggests in the Tosfos over there, similar to what we're saying over here, that Hoda works. That if he admits that he has the money, we don't check up on him. We don't ask him if he really has it. He says that he has this money to pay the Ksuba. If he says he has the money, Ksuba, that's how the Shibud is chal. Shibud is chal because he says that he has the money. So Hoda'at Baldin Kamei Eidim Domi works in a way that we don't question. He can function as a Kenyan, it can function in a way that we don't ask so many questions about it. Whatever he says, we believe, if it turns out to be the benefit of the recipient. And that's true here for Rav Mari, it says to his benefit. In the case of the Ketubah, it's the benefit of the woman, that the Shibud is created because he says that he has the money. All right, now, with regards to a couple of questions, how is it that Rava was upset about what was happening here? So Tosfos asked the question from a number of perspectives. Yes, first of all, from the Gemara in Kiddushin. He says, we have a Gemara in Kiddushin that says that a child who's born, who's conceived, and born before his parents converted, then he converted, the Chachamim are not happy if you give the money to them. I mean, if you create inheritance in that case, Chachamim the Holman are not happy. But in a case where Hoto Shelo B'Kedusha, he was conceived Shelo B'Kedusha, and then he was born B'Kedusha, after the Gerut he was born, then the Chachamim say it's fine, you can give him his Yerusha. So over here, what's Rava doing? Why isn't he giving the Yerusha? There we know from the Gemara in Kedushin that you're actually supposed to give it in that case. So the Tosfos, the Rabbeinu Tam says it's different. Over there was a case of Milveh. It's where a Ovi Kochavim lent him money. He lent him money and then he passes away. He was Mitgayer and then he passes away. So there the Gemara wants to know, should you give the money back to the children or not? Well, it depends on the status of the children. If the children were born before the conversion and therefore they converted along with the parents, you shouldn't give it back. On the other hand, if they converted during the pregnancy and the child was born with Kedusha, then you should give it back to the children. Why over there should you give it back to the children? Because the Ovi Chacham did you a tova. He did you a chesed. He lent you money. So you should do a chesed back to him and give it to his children. On the other hand, over here, the Rava got no chesed from Yisur Guria. It's the other way around. He actually was doing a chesed for Yisur Guria. He was thinking, he was the nifkat. Yisur Guria was mafkidin unto him, so he didn't owe anything to Yisur Guria. If that's the case, he doesn't have to give it to his child. And then Tosfos asked the other question, wait a minute. Why didn't Rava mekayim divrei ha-meis? We know that Yisur Guria wants to get his possessions to his son, and yet Rava is trying to find a way not to give it to his son. Why is it going against Divrei HaMeis? So Tosfos is going to come up with a lot of technical answers, halachic technical answers, which is interesting. We'll explain that in the end. The first answer is given by the Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Meir, that's the Rivam. The Rivam is the brother of the Rashbam and the Rabbeinu Tam. They were all three brothers. They all were children of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir was the son-in-law of Rashi. So they all, the Rivam, Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Meir, the Rashbam, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Meir, and the Rabbeinu Tam was Rabbi Yaakov, Rabbi Meir. So all three of them were the children of Rabbi Meir. So the Rivam suggests that the answer that we don't say mitzvah lekayim divrei ha-meis, and except when he says tnu, give. When he says to give specific instructions to grant or give something, then we're mekayim divrei ha-meis. But if he just says that, I want this guy to eat fruits from my property, I want him to live in my house, we saw before, that doesn't work. That doesn't work as a kinyan shkimeira, and therefore we're not mekayim divrei ha-meis, because he didn't say tnu. So also over here, Yisur Guria never said the tnu, he never said give it to him or grant him. We know that's what he's maybe trying to do, but he never said tnu, give it to him. So if that's the case, there's no mitzvah lekayim divrei ha-meis. That's the Rebab's answer. On the other hand, the Re explains that it's only true that we only say that it's mitzvah lekayim divrei ha-meis when he is mishalish, when he gives his property over to a third party, to an escrow account, to a executor, then do we say it's mitzvah lekayim divrei ha-meis? Because he indicated by giving over to that party that he wants them to do exactly what he instructed. Wait a minute, but that's our case over here. The money's sitting with Rava, so it is with a third party. So that's the Re says. The Re says no. It's only when he granted it that they gave it to that third party with the intent of it being passed or being mekayim the divrei ha-meis. Over here, Yisur Guria gave it to Rava way before it was even an issue of where he was going to place that money or who's going to give that money to. So now that he's in Rava's possession, he can't change the status of it and say, oh, now I want you to become the mekayim divrei ha-meis, now I'm mishalish it. You know, you have to, from the start, put it into the possession of this agent or this escrow in order to be distributed. Then we say mitzvah mekayim divrei ha-meis. But over here, no mitzvah mekayim divrei ha-meis. On the other hand, we have a Rabbeinu Tam explains that the only time he said mitzvah lekayim divrei ha-meis is he was unable to do it while he was alive, and only through death can he give this grant. If he was unable to do it or grant the gift while he was alive, then we say, look, mitzvah lekayim divrei ha-meis. But if he could have done it while he was alive, and he didn't take advantage of doing it when he's alive, then there's no mitzvah lekayim divrei ha-meis. So that's what the situation was over here, because Rav Yisur Guria could have done this during his lifetime and granted to his Rav Mari. The fact that he didn't, we're not going to go mitzvah lekayim divrei ha-meis to try to do it after his death. And then it's possibilities that Rabbeinu Tam suggests that the only time we say mitzvah lekayim divrei ha-meis is by when Yerusha works. I mean, a person that Yerusha works, then not Shechiv Meira works, and therefore mekayim divrei ha-meis works. But mekayim divrei ha-meis will not apply if you don't have Yerusha. And like we said before, when there's no din of Yerusha, there's also no din of mitzvah lekayim divrei ha-meis. But what you see from Tosfos straight out is that he's looking for technical outs for Rava. It doesn't explain Rava's attitude. I mean, that the right thing, v'asita yashar v'atov, was to get the money to the son, Rav Mari. Why was Rava objecting to that? So that other Rishonim discuss, the Meiri suggests over here that Rava intended to give the money to Rav Mari either way, but he was upset because he thought originally he was going to give the money to Rav Mari and it was going to be a chesed. He was going to do a chesed and give it to him because he wasn't Meikar Adin, he wasn't chayiv to give the money to Rav Mari. But then when it came out in the Beis Medrash that Yisur Guria could pass it to his son Rav Mari, Meikar Adin, and he did that, then Rava was now out of the picture. He had to give it to Rav Mari, not because he was being a Baal Chesed, but he has to give it to him because that was Meikar Adin. He was chayiv have to give it to him. So that's what Rava was upset about. That's according to the Meiri. According to the Chazon Ish, that Rava actually was a responsible for the Aniyim in his city. And since he was responsible for the Aniyim in his city, he needed the money to supply the Aniyim over here. And because he needed the money to supply the Aniyim, he thought that, oh, this money from the Rav Mari would be used towards tzedakah. And then in the end, when they found out that Rav Mari would get the money, and then he wouldn't have the money to use for tzedakah, he was upset. He was upset because he lost the money that would otherwise have gone into tzedakah. And there's one other explanation over the Yosef Dat, who suggests over here that Rava was really just mean mechadei the Talmidim. He wanted to see if someone could come up with a solution of how Isur Giura could pass it to Rav Mari. And then when someone came up with it, he said jokingly, almost not as a real thing, he says, ah, now you caused me to lose all this money, now it has to go to Rav Mari. Not that he's saying it in a way that he really was going to keep it, but rather he's saying, ah, look at this, you came up with the answer that's going to make me lose the money as a... more as a joke or as a retort to the one who came up with the solution rather than a halachic statement. And now the Gemara continues. Shira karka koshu, matanato kayemet. Person leaves over any property, then the matana is good. So now we saw this in a Mishnah. The Mishnah says that only when he grants all of his property do we say that when the Shechid Meira does not pass away or he gets up from his deathbed, does it reverse the transaction, the Matnat Shechid Meira. But he leaves over any property for himself, then it's not considered Matnat Shechid Meira in the sense that it's reversible. I mean that whatever he's granted is gone and he can't reverse it. So Umar says, Kamakoshu, how much does he have to leave over? So Amar Yehuda Amar Rav, Karka Kedei Parnasato. He has to leave over land that will provide for him and that he needs enough that will provide for him if he does survive, because that means that he's already thought through the possibility that he will survive, and he left himself enough to survive on. So if that's the case, everything else he gave was a real gift. It doesn't even have to be karka. As long as he has some sort of monetary means, he's left over himself parnasa, a way to ensure that he can have his livelihood taken care of, then that's enough. So Amar Rabbi Zera, Kama Mekuvan, Shmaita to Desabe. He says that our elders, look how good their memrot were. I mean, that they make sense what they're saying over here. Karka, time am I. Why is it that when he leaves her karka koshu, that the transaction is not reversible? Dika isamechale. Because if he survives over here and doesn't die from being on this illness or this ailment that he's facing right now, then he's going to rely on that karka. And that's why we say that the other gifts are real gifts, because he has something to preserve his, lifestyle and his ability to survive, he left behind. So do metaltalei nami ikoi samachalai. Same thing should be true of metaltalei, because the whole point is what his mindset is when he's granting the gifts. If he leaves himself a way to support himself afterwards, it's clear that it means that all the other gifts were good gifts and final gifts. Whereas if he never left himself to anything to support himself, it means that he hasn't thought through the possibility of living. If he hasn't thought through the possibility of living, if he lives, that means that he wants to reverse the gift. So matki for Rav Yosef umai kavananta. Why are these such good memorot? Why are you saying it's so good? First of all, the Mishnah says, Madamar metaltalin, karka it's not. The one who says that metaltalin work, koshu is enough, the Mishnah says karka. The Mishnah says karka. Why are you calling it a metaltalin? Now all of a sudden it works. Madamar kdei parnasato, the one who says that you have to have enough for him to support himself, the Mishnah says koshu it's not. The Mishnah says koshu. So the Mishnah clearly says karka koshu, and now you're inventing it as you're using kdei parnasato as the meaning of koshu, and using karka doesn't mean karka, it means also metaltalin. What type of mekuvan is this? You think that everywhere in the Mishnah when it uses the term karka, it really means literally karka. It doesn't mean metaltalim. That's not. We have a Mishnah. Person who gives over all of his possessions to his Eved, Yatsa ben Chorin, then he goes free with this. Why? Because he's kone. Simultaneously, when he's kone himself, he's kone all the possessions, and together, all of that will release him, make him a ben Chorin, plus he will get possession of all of the property over there. And on the other hand, Shayach Karka Koshu, if he leaves over any property whatsoever, Lo Yatza Ben Chorin, he doesn't go free. Now we're going to read the Gemara here is based on the Havamina of the way they understand the Machlokus here between the Tanakam or the Rabbanan and Rabbi Shimon. And the conclusion, we're going to see this in tomorrow's daf, the conclusion of the Gemara really is that it all has to do with Krut Gita, meaning that how final or distinct a separation do you need between the owner and the Eved in order for it to be complete, for every Kriyat Git. But based on this Havamina, the Gemara reads it now, or the original reading of the Gemara, is that the Chachamim say, well, karka is left over. Any karka, well, you know what? An Eved is like karka. If an Eved is like karka, if you left over some karka, we don't know what he left over. He might have left over part of the Eved. If he left over part of the Eved, then the Eved doesn't go free, he doesn't go three, he doesn't take possession of the items. So the whole thing falls apart. So Rabbi Shimon Omer, Lo Lam Hu Ben Chorin. Now, even if he says, Shir Karka, it's good. Why? Until he says, all of them are given to my Eved. of the chutz me echad mi riboshe ben, except for 1/10,000th of them. So what Rabbi Shimon says, as long as you define what you left over, for instance, you say shayar karka, shayar mitalt, if you specified what you left over, then we don't assume that it applies to the eved. We assume that whatever you left over is outside of the eved, and the eved took full possession of himself. But if you don't define what you left over, you just said, I'm giving him everything except for 1/10,000th, 1/10,000th could be the eved himself. If there's 1/10,000th left of the eved doesn't go free, and therefore the whole gift falls apart. So for Amar Rav Dimi bar Yosef, Amar Rav Elazar, which said, Rav Dimi bar Yosef says on this, Asuma Tautalim Shiretz Alevet. So that here, when we say Karko over here, when the Chachamim say Karko, or when the Rav Shimon says he leaves over anything, we see that Metautalim are enough. If you leave over anything, any small amount, that will be enough to classify the Eved as not being free. As the Rishbam says over here, then Avdanami Kimetautalim Dami. And Eved has a status of Metautalim. He's not just only Karko, he also has a status of Metautalim. Because he's not Mechuber the Karko, he moves around, he's not attached to the ground, and people call him Metautalim. Meaning that even though maybe halachically, or mean din d'oraisa, we're going to see tomorrow, the Tosfos, others believe that the any din d'oraisa, and Eved has a din like Karko. Nevertheless, when it comes to Lashon Bnei Adam, when it comes to the way people interact, they call Avadim Metautalim. So if that's a din metautalim, if he said this when he was granting the gift, metautalim could even mean to leave over the eved. It's true that Tosfos in other places seems to indicate that when we say avdei kemekarke, it's only for certain items. It's not totally and completely, because we see the Gemara in many places when it has to exclude from a limud something, it says, this word is to exclude karka, this word is to exclude shtarot, this word is to exclude eved. Well, if eved is basically equal to karka, then once you excluded karka, you automatically excluded eved. So why do you need a special exclusion for eved? It might be because in this specific din, there's something unique about Eved, or because Eved's not totally like Karka. But if that's the case, that Metaltalin, you see over here that even though the Mishnah said the word Karka, nevertheless it's referring to Metaltalin as well. This is a din that we learned before, that when a person, a husband, distributes to his children all his possessions, and then he leaves, gives over something to his wife. So he distributes to all Isha ben Abanim, he distributes to everybody, including his wife, a piece of property. If the wife takes it, accepts it, and doesn't say anything, then she loses her ketubah. That's only true if he grants her karka. That's only if he gives her karka. Why? Because the karka is the din of where the ketubah would be nigveh from, where it would be collected from. On the other hand, if he leaves her metaltalim, meaning he distributes all the property to all the different children, and he only leaves over metaltalim for his wife, then she's not mochelet on her ketubata. Because metaltalim are not something that she classifies as belonging to the ketubah, or a collection, or in place of the collection of her ketubah. That may only true in the time of the Gemara. We know, we've seen from the Tosfot on Kuf Chavav, I think there's a Rashbam also mentions it in on Samach Zayin Amud Aleph there, that the Geonim or Metakein, that for a ketubah can collect from Metaltalim as well. That today we think Metaltalim are equivalent to Karka. If that's the case, maybe in the case where he makes a distribution and gives Metaltalim to his wife, that it would be Mochelet HaKetubata, because the status of Metaltalim have changed. But at least in the time of the Gemara, that wouldn't be the case. The Metaltalim wouldn't have been sufficient. But what do you see again? You see that the word Karka was used in the Mishnah, nevertheless we call it metaltalin. So when it says no, hotam bedin hu delo ne karko. Truthfully, the Mishnah shouldn't have used the word karko. But the beginning of, you need the other half of that Mishnah. You didn't look at the whole context. In the context, it says Rabbi Akiva mer karko koshu chayavet bepeya. When it comes to any amount of karko, you're chayav in peya and in bikurim. You can use that for a pruzbol to protect you from hashmatat ksafim, for shmitat ksafim. Veliknoti mehem nechasim. You can do a kinyan agav with any koshu karko. Shein lehem achrayut bekesav shtar. So because of the linguistic parallels between the Reisha of the Mishnah and the Seifa of the Mishnah, the Gemara says that's why it used the word Karka. Truthfully, it could have used the word Metaltalin, but just to keep a stylistically, it kept the word Karka. So that's not a good proof that Karka can be used interchangeably, or it can mean Metaltalin in a Mishnah, because that case is an unusual case. It's a linguistic decision, not a halachic decision. Is it really true that any place that they use the term Koshu, there's no shiur, but it's not. We have a tanan by Reishit Hageiz. Rabbi Dosa ben Herkunas Omer Chamesh Rechelot Gozuzot Maneu Pras Maneu Pras. What do you have to? How much do you have to shear in order to be chayv in Reishit Hageiz? So Rabbi Dosa explains, according to Chamesh, that it's five Rechelot. You have to sue five sheep, five ewes. That you take each one produces maneu pras. Each one produces maneu pras. Then you're chayavot in Reishit Hageiz. V'chamim armim Chamesh Rechelot Gozuzot Kol Shein. That it's five ewes that actually give off, when you shear them, they give off any amount. V'amrinan, v'kama koshein. And we ask, what is the koshein that the Chachamim say? Amarav, maneu pras, uvachye mechumashet. So Rav says, oh no, the Chachamim agree that it has to be maneu pras, but it has to be maneu pras for all five of them together. Each one has to contribute 1/5 of that, meaning 50% of it. Each rechel must contribute 20% of the amount to get to a maneu pras, but many are prized for all five of them together, as opposed to the opinion of Rabbi Dosu, who says that each one by itself must produce a mane upras in order to be chayv reshit hagaze. So what do you see here? You see the Chachamim use the term koshahain, and the Gemara is asking, what does koshahain mean? What's the shear of koshahain? What do you mean, what's the shear of koshahain? Koshahain means kosho, just like Rabbi Yossi suggests over here. No, so you see that the word kosho is used even when it implies a certain fixed amount. So the Gemara says, no, over there, v'hatim hu didin lo dinei kosho. Over there, the Gemara shouldn't have used the word kosho, or the Mishnah shouldn't have used the word kosho. Since Rabbi Dosa used such a large amount or a huge amount, their shiur, when you're saying basically it's 20% of the Tanakama shiur, the Tanakama says you need money oppressed from five different animals, and they say you need money oppressed between all five animals, so it's 1/5. So since the gap or the distance between the two opinions is so great in the context of the Tanakama's position, they call it a koshein. So relative to the Kamakama, it's called a koshein, but not that koshein. Anytime we say koshein, we look for what that shiur means, what's the minimum shear? No, kosho means kosho, except in cases where it's unusual that the distance between the two opinions is so far, they use koshein to indicate a much smaller shear. So basically, the Gemara is inconclusive about this, whether kosho means literally kosho, or kosho means kadei parnasanto. It turns out to be a machlokas aposkim between the Rif and the Rosh, had a paskin over here, whether kosho means literally a kosho and that's sufficient, or you need kadei parnasanto. Okay, we'll stop over here.